Let's see, and if there was like two things I could tell people, I'll probably tell you more than two things here, but two things I could tell people if I was going to die tomorrow, which is, you know, you never know, it's always a possibility, and not see people again. Those two things, the first one would be that if in doubt, go to Rev. Master's teaching and hang on to it for dear life. Don't let anything water it down, dilute it, sidetrack it. If you want the very heart of her teaching, go to her commentary on the precepts and to How to Grow a Lotus Blossom, where that commentary of the precepts first appeared. And that's the teaching for us, I believe. It's certainly the teaching for me. That's what I treasure most in life. The second thing is just to remind people that people who know all the answers don't need the eternal. People who need the eternal are people who don't know the answers and who therefore go to the eternal for the answers. And the way to do this is pure meditation and asking. And no matter how long you've trained, how much merit you've accumulated, that doesn't change in the least. In fact, if one's really learning what the important thing is to learn, it's just, you know, how much you need the eternal, and that the eternal is there to meet that need. And that you can sincerely ask from your heart, and you can sincerely hear the response. And you need to sit still to hear it. You need to sit still to ask from the right place. And you need to sit still to open your heart to the response that's coming. You need to sit still to listen. And then you need to be willing to move, and move just as quickly as you need to, if you need to move quickly, when the response comes. If it's move, then move. One has one's own wishes, one's own expectations, one's own swollen-headedness, one's own self-judgment in the way, then it gums up the works. If one doesn't, then there it is. When you read Rev. Master's commentary on the precepts, that's just laid out for you. So it permeates it. I had the good fortune to train with Rev. Master both before that time and during that time in 1976 and after it. And I'll just tell you that before that time, before 1976, Rev. Master never, that I can remember, spoke of reliance upon the eternal in this way that I'm talking about it. It's not that she didn't do it, but she just hadn't really thoroughly learned the process, and that's what she learned in that great Kensho of hers in 1976. And the gateway into that for everyone is time spent in hell, frankly. Time spent on your hands and knees, spiritually. And as Rev. Master Mokian so wonderfully puts it, you know, time spent resting on the bottom of the ocean where you sank to, and when that's all you can do is just be still on the bottom of the ocean, then you're becoming a good listener. We all would like it to be another way. And people strive mightily to make it be another way. But I just promise you, it won't be another way. There's no way around this. It's a process. That's why Koho Zenji said, you know, if you meditate, you run the risk of being grabbed by the cosmic Buddha. Her master often quoted him on that. And it sounds good, you know, it sounds catchy and real zenny and everything. It's not catchy and zenny when you go through it. It takes tremendous faith. And anyone can do it who just really wishes to do it. How hard is it to ask for help? Well, being someone who at times has had tremendous trouble asking for help, I say it can be really hard. But then you get to a place one day where it's really easy. You run for it. You run for it. Sometimes quite literally. At that time, we need the help of God and we need the help of man. And the help of man is provided by God. And by at least one person's utter willingness to stand by us and support us. When a monk is ordained, the master recites a long kind of statement, really, expressing what it really is that the monk is doing. And one of the things the master says during that long statement is, the merit of first mind is the widest and most completely fathomless. Even if Buddhas explain it fully, such explanation can never be enough. And that's what I'm talking about. First mind or beginner's mind. What is beginner's mind? A true beginner is someone who knows they don't know. Therefore is looking for help. It takes some of us a long time, I realize, to get to the point where we're a beginner. It can take a very long time indeed. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking that the amount of time you put in somehow makes you no longer a beginner. Don't ever make that mistake. It should just make you a better and better beginner. Someone who knows more and more thoroughly how much you need. The eternal, that which the eternal teaches, those who know the eternal. When we lose sight of our need, it's amazing how out to lunch we can get and how fast we can get out to lunch. It doesn't take long at all. If we lose sight of where the solution lies to our need, we think it's somewhere other than the eternal. We get lost. I mean, there's people who spend lifetimes wandering in samsara looking. When the answer is really right within their own heart, they just sit still. But once you've found that, don't give it up for anything, for anyone. So again, in 1976, where Master wrote, "You hold fast to the Lord of the house, whether I am brightly alive or dying. Hold fast to the Lord of the house." And she found what she went looking for. And life and death are second to that, frankly. And all considerations of life and death are second to that. You have to find it within your own heart. You have to find it in the eternal. The eternal is not outside us. This is the only reason why there's this big fuss about God in the Western world, because they insist on God being outside you. If people just accept that God's actually within here, then there isn't going to be any problem about it. Just Am I going to really ask? Am I really going to listen? Am I going to pay attention? Or am I just going to wander aimlessly in samsara? Well, not aimlessly, of course. Because everyone's always seeking the eternal, if they're seeking anything at all. Whether they know it or not. But Master used to say, you know, another name for the cosmic Buddha or the eternal is love. You know, it's always love with a capital L. So you can say, you know, God is love. But you cannot say that love is God. Don't make that mistake. That'll lead you right into the most seductive delusion. Because we take what we know of love, we try to make that everything. We end up in a soup of glue and breaking the precepts left, right, and center. Don't try to drag down what the eternal is to our own level. We have to try to rise to it. An infinite love is infinitely incomprehensible. We can bow to it, we can appreciate it, we can come to know it through our experience. We can't grasp it, we can't have it, we can't know it with our head. We don't own it, it owns us. Always work at getting it in the right order there. We had the amazing good fortune. I mean, who knows what merit over how many lifetimes manifested in the end in our being able to find a teacher who so pointed the way with such utter clarity and certainty, and who demonstrated it so fully in her life. It's a constant source of amazement to me, really. I had that good fortune. You know, in the scripture on the immeasurable life of the Tathagata, it says a Buddha is rarely met. And when one experiences the kind of painful and anguished, confused jangles of one's past karma, one just sees how rarely a Buddha is met. So when we find that treasury of teaching, we need to value it above everything. Just before she died, her master told me, one of the last things she ever said to me, she said, just when we were alone, she said, in order to have the highest realization, you have to have both the highest practice and the highest teaching. Both the highest practice and the highest teaching. She just said that. And that has rung in my ears ever since, especially since her death. A teaching that came out of her great Kensho in 1976 was, I've thought for many years, and, you know, I've always felt myself to be a, you know, beneficiary of it. I always thought it was given through her for all of us. If you read How to Go to Lotus Blossom, you can read it like one person's experiences. That's really not what it really is. You know, those visions that so many people get kind of hung up on, they're the representation of a teaching. The representation of a teaching. You know, visual aids is what they are, for a truth to be expressed through one human being for the benefit of all beings. Just as happened with the Buddha. All of his teaching came out of his great enlightenment. And all of our master's teaching from 1976 came out of that. Experience flowed out of it in an amazing stream of generosity and compassion and wisdom. It's not that what went before doesn't matter, isn't true. What went before does matter, and it is true. And there's a deeper truth. There is such a thing as a deeper truth. I was saying the other day in my talk, you know, all truth is not equal. River Master herself recognized it once, in that she kind of started to come out of that retreat in 76. I don't remember exactly when it was. It was either in 76, later in the year, or in 1977, early in the year, when the experiences were still continuing at that point. She actually stopped us listening to any of her talks that she'd done before. She had them put away. They were amazing, her talks. But she recognized, if we didn't at the time, how much deeper things had gone. Well, actually, those of us who stayed did recognize it, actually. Some people left because they thought she'd gone a different direction, but she's just gone deeper. It was the same direction. And it saved my spiritual life that time. And has saved my spiritual life at least a couple times since. And whenever that has happened, and many times in between, I have simply had confirmed over and over again the truth of what she taught. In my experience, over and over again. Yes, it's like that. That doesn't mean I've had the same visions. I haven't. That doesn't matter. They're just a vehicle of a teaching. It's a teaching that's been confirmed. What was being passed on, the message in the vehicle was what was confirmed in my experience and confirmed in ways that for me are simply undeniable. Yet if I hadn't been willing to take it on faith when I was terrified that she hadn't got off the track, I would have left and never found what I found. I would have left the guide that was given to me by the Eternal and gone off on my own. It wouldn't have been good. So her being willing to guide me saved me. The teaching that came through her saved me, and my faith saved me. But where do all those things originate, and where do they all return to? The Eternal. It may be a while before we know this, but one day we do know it. Don't think that because the Eternal isn't a God in the sense of a big, great big guy in the Sistine Chapel with a long beard who judges, sends some to heaven and some to hell on the basis of very scanty evidence, I might say. Don't think because the Eternal is not that, that the Eternal is just like some kind of abstract principle. If you remember in your history of Western thought. That's the one of the positions taken by a group called the Deists back in the around the beginning of the 19th century. People like Jefferson, I think, was probably a Deist, if I remember correctly. It's a popular position that God had just kind of set the mechanism of the universe in motion, then was just kind of sat back and did nothing. It was just kind of a creative principle or a kind of abstraction, you know. The Buddha nature is not an abstraction. The Buddha nature is not inactive. You know, our heads do funny things. Just because our head can't comprehend what the Buddha nature does not mean the Buddha nature does not do. Just because our heads can't fathom the infinite intelligence of the Buddha nature doesn't mean there isn't that infinite intelligence. One of the most amazing things for me, I mean it in the true meaning of the word amazing, just being dumbfounded at it, was the way back in a retreat 98-99, during a certain period of that retreat, each day it'd be kind of like, at a certain time, it'd be like the cover over the cover that normally hides the workings of the universe was like taken down, and I was able to just look into it. And it was a purely intuitive thing, not through the physical senses. And there was the one thing I knew for sure was that there was impossible to comprehend it in the least. My brain wasn't functioning in the normal sense anyway at the time. It was kind of shut off for anything other than just basically one purpose. It would be turned on each day for a while to review past karma. Shut off again. And so this was during the period when it was, you might say, kind of on, up to a point. But it was really clear that what I was looking into was simply incomprehensible. I was allowed to appreciate it, not to understand it. Appreciation is not the same as understanding. It was really clear, it's infinite in its complexity. And it was really clear that it was all functioning for the good of beings. That statement that River Master had to take on faith initially, that we all have to take on faith initially, that everything that happens is for my good. That is not some ideal expressed to help us get over the rough times. That is a literal truth. It's the way the universe functions. The universe is the body of Buddha. Body of the eternal. And everything that happens is for my good. The fact that I don't see it sometimes is my problem, not the universe's problem, not the eternal's problem. Whether I see it or not, it's still functioning for my good. This is why Ko Zenji told River Master when she went to train with him, all acceptance is the gateless gate. Only one gate you can go through. That's all acceptance. It's only all acceptance. It's only bowing to everything that helps us recognize this truly amazing fact. Try to explain it. I don't understand it the least. The fact that I don't understand it doesn't mean that it's not true. This is why it's so important we get our kind of Western education and basically the nurturing of swollen-headedness out of the way. Or nurturing of reliance on the intellect. And just be willing to be like a little child looking into the heart of things, which is a good description of samadhi. We're never going to comprehend it. We don't need to. It is. We can bathe in it. We can swim in it. We can drown in it. We're born in it. We die in it. I don't know if it can be truly said that the further you go, the less you know. But I will say that the further you go, the less you need to know. The less you feel a need to know. It is enough to know the Lord of the house. To know with the heart. Whatever the head thinks. The head's the last part of us to cotton on. Don't wait for your head to get it. You'll be waiting a long time.